This is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, November 6th, 2013. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Christina Thomas. The Rogers Historical Museum presents Art from the Earth on exhibit now through February 2014. This exhibit features the museum's own collection, as well as other collections, to illustrate the wide range of pottery used and sometimes made in Arkansas over the centuries. Located in historic downtown Rogers, 621-1154, or rogersarkansas.com/museum for more information. Ozarks at Large is sponsored in part by the University of Arkansas Women's Giving Circle, whose mission is to transform and expand women's giving to university programs and research through a collective voice.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, the Amazium receives a large gift, and Grant Neal, the director of the Arkansas Economic Development Commission, talks to Roby Brock about the state of Arkansas's economy.
Plus, the launch of a new magazine focused on the local culinary culture, stories from Fort Smith's past, music from the Austin Lounge Lizards, and more.
But first, the Arkansas Department of Education has announced 137 public schools have attained achieving status by meeting annual targets and test scores. Under the Elementary and Secondary Education Act program, schools are evaluated based on individualized school-by-school-based targets, not statewide targets. Dr. Tom Kimbrell, Commissioner of Education, says the needs improvement category is the largest, with 793 schools receiving this designation.
Improvement, and most of our schools are in some level of improvement, is not always a bad thing. As we've said over and over again, every organization that I've ever been a part of, whether we were doing really, really well, whether we were doing mediocre, or whether we were doing poorly, there was a level of expectation of improvement. And we expect our exemplary schools to continue to improve.
In Northwest Arkansas, more than 50 schools are on the improvement list. The full list of top-level schools or exemplary schools is expected to be released today.
Officials with the Arkansas Department of Human Services say just more than 49,000 Arkansans are now signed up for the health insurance through the state's health insurance marketplace. The state's private option health insurance expansion plan, which was approved by the legislature this year, uses federal Medicaid money to buy private insurance through an exchange. Spokeswoman Amy Webb says yesterday steps were taken to complete the process.
The Department of Human Services began auto-assigning health plans for people who told us, yes, we want to enroll in the private option. They were eligible, but they never got around to picking their own plans. And so we needed to complete that enrollment process for them, and they will be notified of the plan that was selected on their behalf, and they now have 30 days to change that plan if they would prefer something else.
Assignments were made according to a formula set by the Arkansas Insurance Department. Coverage for those now enrolled begins in January. People with incomes of up to 138% of the poverty line are eligible.
After a pair of announcements yesterday, one more is in and one is out of the race for the Arkansas 4th District seat in the U.S. House. James Lee Witt of Dardanelle officially announced his intentions to run for Congress on the Democrat ticket. Speaking to reporters on a conference call yesterday, Witt said he wants to bring change to the atmosphere in Congress.
The reason I'm running is simple. I've spent my adult life bringing people together at the toughest times of their lives and dealing with the disasters. Nowhere needs disaster relief more than Washington. No place needs to be brought together more than Congress. I don't claim to know everything, but I do know that name-calling and partisan bickering aren't going to solve any problems.
Witt is a former Yale County judge, and he served as the director of the Federal Emergency Management Agency under President Clinton for 8 years, beginning in 1993. Witt faces Janice Percival, a community college instructor from Hot Springs, in the Democratic primary. Whoever wins the primary will face one of two Republicans vying for the seat, Bruce Westerman, a state representative from Hot Springs, and businessman Tommy Mall, as potential representatives for the district. While Witt announced his plans to run, Beth Ann Rankin, a Republican who has had two prior unsuccessful campaigns for the seat, announced her intentions to stay out of the race. According to Talk Business Arkansas, Rankin ran in 2010 and 2012, first losing to Mike Ross in the general election, then losing last year's Republican primary to Congressman Tom Cotton. Rankin, who hails from Magnolia, said while she is staying out of this race, she isn't ruling out a campaign in the future for the 4th District seat.
the U.S. Marshals Museum in Fort Smith has received additional support. Yesterday, Arvest Bank announced that it is donating $100,000 to the museum as a founding donor gift. In terms of comparison, museum officials in August said then that it needed to raise between $10 and $15 million by September 2014 to meet its roughly $30 million needed to break ground on the facility. The overall project cost is estimated at around $53 million.
The third annual Protein, Produce, and Pennies food drive that was held in Fayetteville throughout the month of October garnered more than 1,400 pounds of hunger relief efforts in Northwest Arkansas. 595 pounds of dry goods and 833.5 pounds of fresh produce were collected and donated to Northwest Arkansas Hunger Relief and to the Fayetteville Public Schools Outback Pantry.
Mercy Hospital Northwest Arkansas has named Eric Pinalto as its new president. According to the hospital, Pinalto has served as interim president since July 31st, and he will manage the next phase of Mercy's community growth plan. He has been an administrator with Mercy Health Systems for 19 years, including 10 years in Northwest Arkansas, as well as roles in Fort Smith and Oklahoma. Prior to serving as interim president, Pinalto was the chief operating officer of Mercy Clinic in Arkansas and Oklahoma.
Tonight, expect mostly clear conditions with lows from 30 in northwest Arkansas to 35 in the Arkansas River Valley. Sunny tomorrow with highs in the lower 60s. And tomorrow night, expect mostly clear skies with lows from 33 in northwest Arkansas to 38 in the Arkansas River Valley. The next large museum to alter the landscape in Bentonville, the Amazium, had big news to share yesterday. The Interactive Museum staff announced an eight-figure matching grant has been met, and as a result, an ambitious fundraising goal is more than halfway done. The concept for a children's museum in Northwest Arkansas started in 2006, and yesterday afternoon, Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums talked to a member of the Amazium staff about the latest news and what's next in the process of creating the museum.
The ground has not yet been broken for the Amazium in Bentonville, but yesterday, the staff got a little closer to putting shovel to dirt. This is how Holly Hook, the Capital Campaign Director for the Museum in Progress, expressed her feelings late yesterday afternoon.
Yes, sir. We're excited.
That excitement is because the Amazium, a proposed museum catering to children and families, is closing in on its capital campaign goal of $28.5 million. Yesterday, the museum announced that campaign has a big boost from a one-to-one matching grant of $10 million by the Walton Family Foundation. Again, Holly Hook.
Well, it actually gives us a really good jumpstart to our efforts to building the Amazium. So what has happened is we have actually raised $10 million, which means now, in return, the Walton Family Foundation will match that. So it gives us a total of $20 million.
The matching grant from the Walton Family Foundation is in addition to the donation of land for the museum from the Rob and Melanie Walton Fund of the Walton Family Foundation. That land on Northeast J Street in Bentonville. The Amazium's steering committee has set a goal of reaching the $28.5 million fundraising goal before the groundbreaking takes place. Hook says the announcement of the $10 million matching grant yesterday allows the timetable for the Amazium to proceed toward the groundbreaking relatively soon.
With us making the match, we will continue to progress in getting our architecture designs totally finished, completed. And so our hopes would be to break ground in 2014 with a 12-month to 18-month build out. So best case scenario and hopeful is to be open by 2015.
When finished, the Amazium is expected to be a 44,500-foot facility with amenities that have descriptive names like an exploratory wet lab, a tinkering studio, and climbable tree canopy. Holly Hook says the exhibits and hands-on features inside the completed museum will have been, in a way, crowdsourced over the past few months and years. The staff conducted what they called dream-catching sessions in communities throughout Northwest Arkansas to hear what people wanted in the Amazium.
And we held these with community people throughout Northwest Arkansas, all the way from Bella Vista to Farmington to Hinesville to Huntsville, all the way to Siloam. And basically, we heard some things that just came up consistently, so we know that the expectation is there, such as some sort of water feature. Seems like everybody loves water. There's a lot to be learned, you know, with water, and of course with Beaver Lake and, you know, all of our waterways here. It's an important component. So we do feel like we'll have some sort of water exhibit.
There will also be exhibits dedicated to the state's past, including examples of what it might have been like to live in Arkansas 100 or 200 years ago, and a learning lab that will allow for all kinds of hands-on science work and exploration.
Which would look a lot like maybe your 8th grade science lab, where we can do a lot of programming, some dissections, some, you know, viewing of different scientific matters, building molecules, you know, different sorts of science activities, skeletons, things like that, that we can enhance the programming for.
The 44,000-plus feet of inside Amazium will be complemented by the land donation that includes plenty of real estate outside the eventual museum building.
The outside is going to be over an acre, or right at an acre, which is really unique for children's museums, or for, you know, these type of facilities, because usually a science center or discovery center, something to this magnitude, are landlocked. They, you know, put them in refurbished buildings, things like that. So the opportunity to have an acre attached to it to increase our programming, the outdoors, is, you know, definitely going to enhance the whole Amazium experience.
Yesterday's announcement does mean the Amazium's goal of raising $28.5 million is more than halfway done, but Holly Hook says the work continues to complete the capital campaign.
We have already secured a few of those, but we have room for probably 2 to 3 more. And they'll have, you know, there's some incentives, some special opportunities for those corporations, foundations, and individuals, that they'll, you know, be able to be in the know, be able to be invited to some advanced tours, those types of things.
You can learn more about the Amazium at the website amazium.org. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Kyle Kellums.
Also at the museum's website are architectural renderings of what the museum building and the land around the museum is expected to look like when the Amazium is completed.
The state of Arkansas has experienced a surge in job announcements this fall, from a company that will make cookie dough in Springdale to a pet food company in Fort Smith. The announcements have been met with enthusiasm from the state's leaders. Recently, Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas asked Grant Tenniel from the Arkansas Economic Development Commission about the recent announcements and about the state of Arkansas's economy in the weeks after the federal government shutdown.
What's happening with economic conditions in Arkansas right now? We seem to be seeing some momentum in a positive direction, although there's been a layoff or two that's been announced.
There have been. I think we're seeing confidence come back slowly but surely. We've been seeing it for really the past year. And I think the best answer behind our really great September and October is that, you know, these deals take a while to get fully baked, and we worked very hard through the summer, and then you reach August and nobody really wants to do much of anything, and so we were able to schedule them just boom, 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 all the way, you know, from about the last week of September through August.
What did you see
through October?
What did you see in terms of the federal government shutdown? It seems like that was a confidence killer to a large extent, but were these things so far in the pipeline that it wasn't going to stop them from happening?
That's exactly right. That the deals were far enough along that there was nothing that was going to stop them. Now, I can tell you that we've got other things that we're working on currently where, you know, the phone didn't ring for a couple of weeks and we were left to wonder if things were still on go. But mostly, I think, as worried as the business community was, it's become expected that these guys in Washington are going to fight and fuss and quarrel and be completely ineffective right up until the moment where they're getting ready to sink the world's economy, and then they'll have an agreement.
You know, we had Randy Zook, Mike Callen, Steve Cousins,
yep.
All from the Chamber Associated Industries of Arkansas on a couple of weeks ago, and they amplified that. They said that we've seen this movie before. It's just a rerun of something that we've already been through before. But why do you think that does not deter business confidence? Because over and over and over again, it's got to get so frustrating.
Honestly, I think that most folks don't recognize just how close to the edge we're really getting. I have friends and family in the financial services sector, and for the first time, they started receiving sort of real questions from the feds and others as the shutdown moved into its second week and default loomed closer and closer. You know, phones started ringing, and people were asked things like, how would you do if you had, I don't know, no liquidity mm-hmm. for a while? And so I don't know that, you know, the rank and file American, you and me, really have any idea as these things are going on how perilous the situation is. I think those guys in Washington do, and they've got all the right people leaning in their ear saying, you know, okay, playtime's over.
Do you see a repeat performance in January and February when we have to deal with the budget again and the debt ceiling again?
I don't see how they can put the country through it again. I think, you know, if this is an every other year event, everybody just sort of says, okay, here we go again. It's kind of like, you know, train strikes in France. But to come back so quickly and have the same argument, I think that, again, the average rank and file American may actually wake up and say, come on, yeah. Wait a minute.
Let's talk about some of the job announcements that have been coming to Arkansas. I think in the last 2 weeks, as I indicated earlier, you've had some small things like advanced cabling systems, good paying jobs, the types of kind of engineering jobs that you want to have here. You've got Serco up in northwest Arkansas with a huge amount of influx of new folks. Tell me which ones you maybe are proudest of in terms of what you've had to work on, work the hardest on.
Well, advanced cabling systems is just a great story. You know, started by Bob East and Michael Kennedy here because they saw a niche a few years ago, and it's just exploded. They're now working on contracts in Oklahoma and Missouri. I mean, that's one that is going from, you know, local boys made good to sort of regional type of activity. The other one that is very exciting is Rod Ford and Engage Labs, which is moving some very, very highly skilled folks from Scottsdale, Arizona, to come here to do really advanced data analytics aimed at the retail and the entertainment sectors. Those are the kinds of jobs, well, they're going to pay average, I think it's $125,000, right. But just getting those people here, you know, if for whatever reason one of them leaves Engage in a few years and is happy living in Arkansas, those are the kind of people who start new businesses.
Now, they located that business down in the River Market. Rod Ford made a point in the press conference there of saying he thought that was a pretty good place for a tech park to locate, which it wound up the vote has come down on. Did you have a dog in that fight?
I had come out much earlier and agreed with the governor that the synergy of everything we have going on downtown right now would make for a good location. I'm also keenly aware of what Dr. Ron and Dr. Good want that tech park to accomplish, and understood that that could probably be done best in closer proximity to the two campuses. Nobody could ever just come up with the right spot that mm-hmm. somebody didn't object to for one reason or another. And when it became clear that probably wasn't going to work, downtown seems like the best available alternative.
Let's talk about Big River Steel. A little bit of a delay, a little bit of a hiccup going on up there. Can you kind of give our viewers and listeners a little bit of background of what's happening?
I can. Big River has a very large competitor that has operations here in the state that has really resisted Big River's development from the moment that it was announced. Fought hard in the legislature to prevent it.
Shall I say Nucor Steel, since you did not say Nucor Steel?
You may.
All right.
That competitor is now in the process of challenging the air permit that was granted to Big River Steel by the Department of Environmental Quality. Mm-hmm. That's a 120-day process, which will kick us over the end of the year and put the closing more likely in first quarter of 14.
Does that give the financing folks that wanting to back this project, does it give them pause for concern to not go forward with the financing?
I will say,
or to just stop the groundbreaking from taking place?
Right now, it's stopping the groundbreaking from taking place. We have been in close communication with all of the financiers. Everybody is still committed to this project. The state's still committed to this project. Entergy's committed. The railroad's committed. The folks in Mississippi County and Osceola are committed. It's a thing that they've got to work through. We've got enormous confidence in the job that Teresa Marks and her staff mm-hmm. did at AEDQ in issuing the proper permit with all of the right backup, but it's a competitive issue.
Yeah, okay. So, what should we be watching for? If I gave you a list of things like Walmart suppliers making some announcements or a particular industry sector, what would you say would be a good thing to kind of keep an eye on?
I think in the short term, Walmart suppliers. I think in the longer term, and this one may be much longer term, but you've reported on one of the developments, automotive. Over the course of 14,
okay.
Maybe one to watch.
Grant Tenniel is the director of the Arkansas Economic Development Commission. He recently spoke with Roby Brock from our content partner, Talk Business Arkansas. Support for Talk Business Arkansas on Ozarks at Large is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse professional experience to clients across the United States. Today, the firm employs nearly 80 attorneys at offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com.
And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at BankOzarks.com. And the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability, from the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road. The Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. More at AECC.com.
It is Wednesday, November 6, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas, and joining me now is Becca Martin-Brown, Features Editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
There's something different about you. You look especially beautiful today.
Well, you're sweet. It's Wednesday.
Yeah, it is Wednesday. All right, so it's also a very important day.
Okay.
It's the day before Thursday.
That would be Wednesday.
And on Thursday, something wonderful happens.
Is tomorrow a special Thursday?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Tomorrow is the 5x5 jazz soiree
okay.
at the Art Center of the Ozarks
yeah.
in Springdale.
Mm-hmm.
I love the 5x5
jazz
soiree.
You do love
soiree.
The 5x5.
I do. Okay, here's the premise. Artists in the community take 5x5 canvases, and they make wonderful things. And then they bring them to ACO, and they hang on the walls for a month when you go in and you find what you want. And that's why I'm telling you today, is because you need to go there from 9 to 5 and find what you want. You need to not want the same one
that
I
you do.
Mm-hmm. Because I'm vicious and I have friends. But then you go to the jazz soiree, you pay $10 to get in, you get a mountain of wonderful food, you get jazz music by the swing set, and you get to bid in silent auction for the ones you want. There's like 300 of them. How bad could it be? It's, you know, you can find one you love and not even have to compete with me for it.
Okay.
Starts at 5:55 tomorrow at the Art Center of the Ozarks in Springdale.
Of course it does.
And admission is $10.
All right. Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is Features Editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This Week in This American Life, our producer, Sarah Koenig, her mom has this list of 7 things you are never, ever supposed to talk about because they are so boring.
Never talk about how you slept. Nobody cares. Don't talk about your health either. Nobody cares. Your dreams.
This week, we take up the challenge. We look for non-boring stories on all 7 topics and try to prove her wrong.
Listen Sunday at 10 a.m. to KUAF Public Radio.
This is Ozarks at Large. Edible Communities Incorporated is a publishing and information services company that creates community-based local foods publications in distinct culinary regions throughout the United States and Canada. This fall, Northwest Arkansas has joined the ranks of places like Austin, Brooklyn, and Portland who have their own edible publication. Edible Oz Arkansas is a local, independently owned quarterly magazine dedicated to covering the unique culinary culture of the Arkansas Ozarks. Amanda Cothran, a print designer at the University of Arkansas, is the editor of Edible Oz Arkansas, which will highlight stories from Benton, Carroll, Madison, Sebastian, and Washington counties.
It has just been the best experience I could possibly imagine. I've been looking for ways to align my passion with my skill set for several years now, and I was doing something I was good at, but it didn't excite me every morning. I love higher education, and I can get behind it, but not in the same way that I love this local food movement and the excitement around that and the support I feel towards just this movement taking off locally and nationally and the beauty of that. And so it's just been the most tremendous blessing that it found me. And it was one of those things I wasn't looking for. And it just came right into my life. And I had felt like something was coming that was really big and I couldn't put my finger on it. And I didn't know how to prepare. I was willing to go back to school. I was willing to, you know, to continue my education. I was willing to change vocation. I just didn't know. And then suddenly Edible Oz Arkansas came into my life. And I really felt like that I was just at the right time for a really good opportunity, and it's just been so fun.
Edible Oz Arkansas is a not-for-profit publication that benefits feed communities. According to its website, Feed Communities is a nonprofit organization created with the vision of supporting and expanding local food systems as a means of providing durable solutions for food insecurity. Denise Garner is the founder and president of the board for Feed Communities. She says the idea for the magazine came from a conversation with the organizers of the Fayetteville Roots Festival a few years ago.
We talked about a magazine that would describe the music and the culture of the Arkansas Ozarks, which is how Oz Arkansas came to be. And so meeting with Brian Hembry and Jeremy Gothrop and Melissa Terry, we all started talking about how exciting it would be to have a magazine that talked about the culture of Oz Arkansas. And so as we got more and more involved in Feed Communities, which is a nonprofit organization for hunger relief and nutrition education, we started talking about the fact that food and culture and nutrition in Oz Arkansas was also very, very important.
Denise says the magazine transitioned from a publication about music and culture to a publication about food and culture, which will include a series of stories focusing on music in the summer issue that will be released prior to the Fayetteville Roots Festival in August. The mission of Edible Oz Arkansas is to nourish, support, educate, and celebrate Northwest Arkansas's local food community season by season. The publication reports on the growers, artisans, purveyors, and many others who play a role in the region's culinary scene. The premier issue is available now and features a number of recipes as well as a story about a new Arkansas law that allows farmers to sell raw milk. As they plan for future editions, Denise says each issue will have a story about edible equity as well as stories that fit with each season.
We're hopeful that there will be years and years to come for these seasonal stories, and so a lot of them will be able to hold until the next season.
Yeah, I think past that, you do it the same way that you would with any quarterly publication, which I suppose I am glad that I have that kind of experience. And you just put up, you know, huge white paper and say, fall of 2014, fall of 2015, winter of 2013, 14, 15. And I'm trying to develop a three-year volume plan and fit in what seems to be a good fit in an issue together and what would be good, you know, seasonally. And then there's always those wonderful evergreen stories that could be picked up during any season of the year. And those are good to be working on at any time so that if something falls through, you can always slip it in. And so it's coming together, you know, it's just an exciting time.
Denise says recipes featured in each edition will be seasonal and as local as possible, meaning a reader could go to their local farmer's market to find the food necessary to produce a certain dish. 20,000 issues of Edible O's Arkansas were printed for the fall edition, and staff members are already working on the winter issue. Editor Amanda Cothran says the next edition should be available in early December and will feature a profile of Airship Coffee, a local business that uses a direct trade business model, as well as a story about how to spread your giving throughout the year instead of just during the holidays. Amanda says her goal for the magazine is engagement and supporting the local community.
I think any time you inspire people to start that talk about the local foods movement and supporting local, whether that's a farmer, a restaurant, a potter, you name it, that discussion of let's get back to we're a community. Not just Fayetteville, but all of Northwest Arkansas. You know, we work together, we play together. And I think anytime you start that discussion about how we can really keep the funds inside our area and support one another, good things are going to happen. And so I suppose, aside from just being inspired to cook and get back into your own kitchen, which builds that family unit in ways that are just incredible, also, just coming around to that local food conversation would be part of my goal for it.
Denise adds that it's all about communities working together to support the people within those communities.
We feel very strongly that that's the way that people respond the best. When we know that our neighbors are in trouble, we're right there to help. And so we also know that the way to make certain that everyone has access to healthy foods is to make certain that those that are producing the healthy foods are sustainable. And so we want to make sure that folks know that our local farmers need our support. And we want people to know that what it takes for those farmers to survive and why the costs are what they are and what the health benefits are.
Free copies of Edible O's Arkansas are available in locations throughout Northwest Arkansas, including Greenhouse Grill, Ozark Natural Foods, and the Fayetteville Public Library. If you want to support the publication, subscriptions are available for $22 per year. For more information, you can visit edibleozarkansas.com.
Hi, my name is Paul, your host for the Generic Blue Show, which airs every Friday night at 9 o'clock. Join me this week. We are previewing Earl and Them's new CD, Same Love. They have a CD release party November 22nd. Also playing some B.B. King prior to his Eureka Springs Auditorium performance Monday, November 18th. That's the Generic Blue Show this Friday night at 9 o'clock. We'll see you then.
In the mid-1800s, Fort Smith was in Crawford County rather than Sebastian County as it is today. At that time, Crawford County was large, extending north to the Missouri line, including Scott County to the south, and to the west to include Sequoia County in Oklahoma. Prior to the infamous Judge Isaac C. Parker's reign in Fort Smith, the federal court was actually in Van Buren from 1851 to 1871. Earlier this week, I caught up with Tom Wing, director of the Drennan Scott House Historic Site and instructor at the University of Arkansas Fort Smith, to learn about this lesser-known time period in the Western District Federal Court's history. When the Army moved out of Fort Smith after the Civil War, the federal courts moved over there to expand into the vacant space the Army left behind. Wing says, The current population in both Fort Smith and Van Buren is a reflection and direct result of the federal court's move. Back in 1851, when the court had jurisdiction over 69,000 square miles of territory, including Indian tribes in Oklahoma, it gave the court a very difficult job to do. The very first federal court judge in Van Buren was the Honorable Daniel Ringo. Here's Tom Wing.
He is an interesting story because he was a he would be called a Union man, and he was appointed in 1851, and he was still judge at the time of the Civil War. But Arkansas joined the Confederacy, so he stepped down because he was pretty much pro-Union, and the Confederate government, you know, kind of disbanded the court here. They chose to deal with the Indian tribes in a little bit different way. They sent Albert Pike as a representative to them, but then Ringo came back. Shortly after the Civil War, and served kind of in an interim position for a little while. So he stepped out and stepped back in.
Wing will give a talk this Saturday afternoon at 3 at the Fort Smith Public Library's Miller Branch. It's entitled Hangings in Van Buren and Other Long-Lost Tales, the Federal Court of the Western District Before Judge Parker. Prior to that, I asked him to tell me one of those long-lost tales.
Probably one of the most famous things that the court dealt with was the case of Parley Pratt. And Parley Pratt was a Mormon missionary and apostle. It was his actual position, I think, in the church. Came through Crawford County. He was actually running interference for his, I believe she was his seventh wife. They were trying to get to New Orleans to get her kids from her estranged husband and get back out to Utah. Sordid story in a lot of details, but while he was in Crawford County, the jealous estranged husband used his contacts through the Masons and figured out where Pratt was, got him brought up to Van Buren on charges that were pretty much trumped up. They held him in court here for a few days in jail. And then the judge was gone. Ringo was gone at the time, and the commissioner ended up. His name was Ogden. He couldn't hold Pratt for the charges. He didn't have any evidence, so they turned him loose. And what happened was the jealous ex-estranged husband caught up with Pratt as Pratt was leaving Crawford County on the road and murdered him on the highway, or, you know, and stabbed him and shot him. Pratt eventually died. He's buried up in up near Fine Springs, which is north of Alma, Arkansas. And at the same time this is going on, newspaper reports get out to Utah, to the Mormon church, and what we've been able to kind of trace down is the Mormon church reaction was, you know, to avenge his death. And about that same time, a group of settlers from Carroll County, Arkansas, were traveling through Utah territory and had the unfortunate encounter of some Paiute Indians that were probably coerced by the Mormon church to raid this party from Arkansas in revenge for Pratt's death. Pratt McLean, who was the husband, was never brought up on charges, never punished at all, and that was pretty well known out in Utah. So, you know, it's a really tragic thing. Over 100 Arkansans lost their lives in that Mountain Meadows massacre. That is probably a direct result of Pratt's murder in Crawford County. Pratt was held in the court in Van Buren when the court was the Western District of Arkansas, which a few years later became the court over in Fort Smith that Judge Parker's associated with. That's one of the really rich stories that we have over here.
Earlier this year on Ozarks at Large, we reported on the crime duo Bonnie and Clyde's stint in Crawford County in the 1930s. As it turns out, they are not the only well-known outlaws to have made a stop in Western Arkansas.
And then there's one other, I think, really compelling story. Probably the most famous outlaw that was ever kept by the court on either side of the river wasn't really an outlaw. He was a guy that we usually think of as a lawman, and his name was Wyatt Earp. Wyatt Earp, you know, had chosen a life of law enforcement early, but lost his wife. His wife became ill and died, and he really took her death hard. Probably took his sorrows out in a whiskey bottle. Ended up drifting, stole a horse, or got accused of stealing a horse, and ended up in jail in Van Buren, Arkansas, in about 1871, right before the court moved to Fort Smith. The documents aren't totally clear. According to the court records, it looks like he paid his bail and then jumped it and went west, went out and hunted buffalo for a while, ended up in Dodge City, and then out to Tombstone after that, which is a well-known story. But there's also some accounts that maybe he escaped from the jail, and that's one of those areas of history that we're trying to confirm and see. There wasn't a jail escape about the same time that he would have jumped bail, so it's not entirely clear in the documents whether that happened. It was also in the middle of one of those really corrupt administrations. William Britton was the U.S. Marshal, and he was being investigated at the very time for a lot of corruption during that time. There, some historians think that maybe the charges against Earp were fabricated anyway, just to bring him in and cause him to have to pay bail. That was pretty common. I do know that the deputy that brought him in was paid $141 for his services, so it cost the government $141 to bring Earp in. The horse that he supposedly stole, was only valued at about $90. So that's not a very good return on your investment there as far as the investigation. But it's one of those neat stories, and we'll talk about it a little bit more in detail. And that's something that you don't realize is somebody like Wyatt Earp came right through this part of the country, and he's famous even further west, and you know, number of movies have been made and a lot of books have been written, but that guy has a story right here too.
To hear other stories that happened right here in Van Buren, Arkansas, just head to the Fort Smith Public Library's Miller Branch this Saturday at 3 to hear Tom Wing's talk. Wing is the director of the Drennan Scott House Historic Site in Van Buren. This is Ozarks at Large.
Want to take a moment to offer some congratulations to some local sports teams. The University of Arkansas cross country teams had a successful weekend of competition this past weekend. Both teams had a 1-2-3 finish at the Southeastern Conference Championship. The women's team collected its 14th SEC title, while the men's team earned its 21st SEC title in 23 years. In the USTF CCCA rankings, which were released yesterday, the women's cross-country team fell one spot to number 3, while the men's team moved up into the number 9 spot. Both Razorback teams will return to the course at the 2013 NCAA South Central Regional in Waco, Texas, which is on November 15th.
Hobbs State Park Conservation Area is hosting a number of events this weekend, including a self-guided scavenger hunt, story time with Mother Nature, a hike, an eagle cruise, and more. For more information, you can call 789-5000. I've always wanted to take an eagle cruise.
I
know. Becca Martin Brown always talks about him.
So. And it sounds like a good time, yeah. And I know you can see them. But of course, it would be my luck. I would go and not see one,
right,
and be disappointed. But I do know that you see them,
yes.
So we just need to do it.
Maybe we should do that this fall.
I like it.
Okay.
Add it to our list of things to do.
Yeah.
Something else you should add to your list of things to do. The Osher Lifelong Learning Institute at the University of Arkansas is offering a free showing of After the Tsunami, right?
Yes. Larry Foley.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's at 2 o'clock this Sunday in room 107 at the Global Campus Lecture Hall. The event is free and open to the public, and you can get more information by calling 575-4545. So earlier in the show, when we were discussing Edible Oaks, Arkansas, we mentioned Feed Fayetteville. Well, that organization is hosting its next simple food cooking class at 5:30 Monday afternoon at its Fayetteville Community Food Hub, which is located at 221 South Locust. This class will be taught by Wendy Finn of I Am Spa and Stacy Wheaties of Dark Star Visuals, and it'll feature nori rolls, miso soup, and green drinks. To register, you can call Wendy at 466-8294.
The American Red Cross is organizing blood drives in Benton County in a few weeks. The first blood drive is scheduled from 1 to 5 p.m. November 21st at General Electric in Bentonville. The second donation opportunity is scheduled from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. November 27th at Krispy Kreme in Bentonville. A complimentary t-shirt will be presented to donors while supplies last. More information is available at redcrossblood.org.
And a couple of deadlines to remind people about. The Federal Emergency the Federal Emergency Management Agency, I'll get it, has announced that the application period for assistance to firefighters grants for the fiscal year 2013, they are now open. These types of grants can cover the costs of crucial items for firefighters and paramedics, such as firefighting equipment, rescue equipment, and communications equipment. The AFG application period closes at 4 p.m. December 6th. Questions can be directed to the Grants Help Desk at 1-866-274-0960, or you can email firegrants@fema.dhs.gov. The Help Desk is open from 7 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. Monday through Friday, but it will be open until 4 p.m. on December 6th. For additional information, you can visit fema.gov/welcome-assistance-firefighters-grant-program.
In the tradition of life-changing Southern food and great Southern writers, Slim Chickens is donating a $500 book package to a school in each of the markets they serve. And I know their markets are really growing. I keep seeing Slim's Chickens mm-hmm. popping up all over the place. So, mm-hmm. kids, kindergarten through sixth grade, can stop by any Slim Chickens location and pick up an entry form. Simply write a short essay telling how your favorite teacher has changed your life for the better. Turn it in at the counter, and you're entered to win a huge book package for your school. Slim Chickens will choose their favorites, and prizes will be awarded Monday, December 2nd. No purchase necessary to enter. Contest is open to anyone aged kindergarten to sixth grade. Prizes will be awarded in Central Oklahoma, Northwest Arkansas, Central Arkansas, Eastern Arkansas, and Texarkana. For more information, visit slim-chickens.com/essays.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grahaden.
I'm Christina Thomas.
The Austin Lounge Lizards are about as close to a legendary Texas band as they come. The band has been together for 35 years and released 11 albums, including this year's Home and Deranged. The Lizards have a loyal following around the country, in part because of their musicianship and in part because of their slightly absurd way of looking at the world. The band's songs know no sacred cows. Subjects ripe for ridicule include politics, the media, marriage, divorce, religion, sports, and even the very music they play. This past weekend, the Austin Lounge Lizards played a show in Fayetteville and then popped into the Furman Garner Performance Studio to play a live set on Mike Shirky's Pick and Post. They showed off their ability to lampoon the music they love when they played this satirical number about a country music staple, The Breakup.
A one and a three. I know that when we left, you said, let's never talk again. But I'm not calling for myself. I'm calling you for them. Our little ones who waited home, heartbroken and upset. And though they don't remember much, they can't seem to forget. The dogs, they really miss you. They're different since you said goodbye. They brood, they pout, they feel put out. If they could speak, they'd tell you how. They're too down to play around. They hardly touch their mules. The dogs, they really miss you. And I know just how they feel. Their tails don't wag. Their hearts won't heal. They blame themselves that you're astray. Sorry that you felt tied down, never learned to stay. Molly's nose is warm and dry since she sat and watched you pack. She figures that you must be lost and can't find your way back. and Scooter's just a basket case. He won't accept my calls. His squeaky toy lies silent. He's lost interest in his balls. Yes, the dogs, they really miss you. They're not themselves since you're not here. They sleep all day, watch TV all night. They drink way too much beer. They've seen Old Yeller 40 times. They bathe less than they should. The dogs, they stop their poker games. But when you come home for good, you know how they hate to beg. But the dogs are really blue because they really miss you. And you know that I do too. I want.
That was the Austin Lounge Lizards inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio at KUAF this past weekend. The song is titled The Dogs, They Really Miss You. Their latest CD is Home and Deranged. The Austin Lounge Lizards were at KUAF to perform live on Mike Shirky's program, The Pick and Post, which airs each Saturday evening at 7 here on KUAF.
I'm Robin Young. Next time on Here and Now, best-selling children's author Jan Brett turns to her ornamental chickens for inspiration.
I said to my husband, I've learned everything I need to know about men just watching my roosters.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
Listen to Here and Now this afternoon from 1 to 3, then stay tuned to KUAF. All Things Considered begins at 3 on 91.3 FM.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. The Fayetteville Underground, promoting the visual arts in Northwest Arkansas, will host First Thursday Art Reception, November 7th, from 5 until 8:30 p.m. Featured artists will include Oklahoma native Robert Shin and member artist Jan Gosnell. Musical guests include the Percolators. Location and more information available at FayettevilleUnderground.com. KUAF is supported by Arcom Printing, located on the hillside just east of the Township and College intersection in Fayetteville. Arcom Printing provides printing, copying, and digital output services. ArcomPrinting.com or 444-7711.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Chester.
Chester. Good yes, one. I
traveled,
like it.
Traveled down 540 yesterday to go visit Tom Wing.
Oh, that's right.
Who we heard from earlier. Yeah, Van Buren, so.
How was the drive with all of the trees changing color now?
The trees were gorgeous.
Yeah.
I mean, it was absolutely gorgeous. Mm-hmm. It poured down rain on my
sure.
way down, so I had to be very careful and couldn't really
of course.
Pay attention. But on the way back, I was able to really check them out. Lots of oranges and reds and browns.
I might need to make a drive that way today or tomorrow because I feel it's one of those things they change and then it's quickly and it's gone.
You're almost running out of time, I think.
I think so. Yeah. Okay. Adding that to the list of things to do. Also added to the list of things to do is you should head on over to NPR Music. Their website has a song called Birds and Stars from Elephant Revival. And what's interesting about this is the band was here for the Fayetteville Roots Festival in August, and Folk Alley recorded this song.
Folk Alley being an NPR program mm-hmm. that sponsors the Fayetteville Roots Fest.
Yes, and so they recorded the song and is now up on NPR Music, and so you can check that out there. So a little bit of Fayetteville and NPR, so it's exciting. And Elephant Revival, I know, was one of your favorites.
It was totally one of my favorites. I love them. I had never really listened to them before the Roots Fest, and so seeing them on NPR.org from the Walton Arts Center, it's pretty exciting.
It is very exciting. I saw them at Harvest Festival, and they are definitely worth a listen. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Christina Thomas.
Thanks so much for listening. Have a happy Wednesday.